Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update, an original podcast from Charles Schwab, provides an information-packed daily market recap in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. We're not going to show the chart right now because we don't want to waste a second with Matthew Lozzetti, chief U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank. But Matt, I look at core CPI, and you got to be kidding me. This is, you know, to use a fancy phrase that David Folkerts Landau would use, this is a teensweens move and a turnaround. There's no way there's a vector here. So on the path, it's 6.3% core. What number do you need to see where you have John Farrow's vector of disinflation?
Yeah, so I think we shouldn't overemphasize the 0.3. We've seen that a few times over the past year and a half. But I think when you do look at the underlying elements of this data, there is some support there. So owner's equivalent rent coming off a little bit. We saw health insurance inflation come down, which was anticipated. You're seeing some of the goods deflation as everybody anticipates that we were going to see. Apparel prices down, used cars everybody knew was going to be down, household furnishings coming off. So I think the underlying elements of this report are actually, they're good. They're supportive. There's, some evidence that we are moving from peak inflation down lower. Where do we end up, I think, is the big question.
But to John's point on vector six-ish core inflation, at what point do you say, the arrow's pointing down? Is it 5.8? Is it 5.2? How much move do you need to see in core to say vector in place?
So I think we can't look at the year-over-year data simply because you're building in all these 0.6, 0.7 prints that we've seen over the past year. I think it's all about the month-on-month prints, and I think the market is right to focus on that. In those prints, we've gotten, I would say, some broad-based deceleration in a lot of these categories. I would expect the trim mean and median measures do look better today. It does support, I think, what is the Fed's leaning towards wanting to downshift in December. And then as we get into next year, February, March, it's all about can we maintain some deceleration and will you begin to see the labor market come into better balance over the next several months?
And we're seeing the market downgrade the expectation for a 75 basis point rate hike in December. It seems like a 50 basis point rate hike is being locked in, as well as a lower terminal rate than perhaps they were thinking just a couple of minutes before this report came out. How much does that change your assessment of how far the Fed will have to go if we get an ongoing downshift in the inflation reads, if we get another softer than expected print in December? Does that cause you to rethink, A, a recession, and B, that it's going to be deep?
Yeah, I think the big if is do these continue, because we've seen these 0.3 prints before. But no doubt, if you continue to see these come off, it's certainly supportive for the Fed not having to get to much higher levels. Our terminal rate has been at 4.9%. I think that still seems like a reasonable view at the moment. We wrote a piece yesterday. There's a lot of focus on financial conditions, and certainly with equity markets really taking off here, there will be a lot of focus on our financial conditions easing in a way that Chair Powell does not want. What I would highlight that is maybe a little bit different than that is the bank lending channel. And we get the senior loan officer survey. It's a really good leading indicator when you see tightening of lending standards on commercial and industrial loans, commercial real estate. state, and we've seen a material tightening there. So it's a question of, has the Fed done enough? How much more do they need to do? The bank lending channel tells us you may not need to have a materially higher terminal rate than what's being priced.
It's a 3% move on S&P 500 futures. It's a 19 basis point, 20 basis point move in some places on the curve in the bond market. Let me ask you this. You said something that is of interest to me. This gives the Fed the space to do what they were going to do anyway, which is back away from 75 basis point hikes. If this Fed had this data going into the last meeting, would that news conference have been any different?
I don't think so. I think the worry is when you downshift that you ease financial conditions in a way, kind of like what we saw in July, that is counterproductive from the Fed's perspective. This is one data point. We had 0.6 the previous month. This is 0.3. There are some encouraging elements within this data point, so I definitely want to emphasize that. But the Fed needs to see more to say, you know, we can decelerate then from 50 down to 25 and ultimately pause at some point. It is something that I think helps them along that path, but it's not conclusive evidence, I think, that they, you know, can peak up at 5% and be fine.
For others watching this and listening right now, they won't just have the hope that the Fed backs away from 75 and goes with 50. And this data, if we get the data like this again on December 13th, it would endorse that approach. They're hoping that the second piece of the communication from Chairman Powell also gets readdressed. So it's slower, 75, 50, maybe 25. He also said higher. Does this remove the risk or help to remove the risk that the terminal rate, scope for the terminal rate to go much higher than where we are priced right now is removed?
Yeah, I think some of the context around those comments was lost. You know, when Chair Powell is talking about a higher terminal rate, he's usually referencing what the SEP dot plot was showing in September. That terminal rate was 4.6 as a median.
Up from 380.
Up from 380. But I think he was saying higher than what they had projected as of September. The market went with it and went to 5.25%.
Higher than what we'd priced already.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And so I think there's some context there. He was guiding towards something that was higher than where they were in September, not necessarily something that was materially higher than what the market was pricing at the time.
A viewer just wants to know your view. As we got the CPI report, we got initial jobless claims, and we see the continuing claims ticked up to 1.49 million. How much are we looking at increase in employment rates that perhaps people have not really priced in fully?
Yeah, so on our read, continuing jobless claims are the best real-time indicators of recessions. There's been a lot of difficulty in interpreting that data. At least if you look to the prior weeks, you had seen this uptick take place, but it was only in the seasonally adjusted data. It was not in the NSA data. So I think there's some caution because there's been a lot of difficulty seasonally adjusting the data post the pandemic. But if you continue to see that rise, it is something that tells you the labor market is beginning to materially loosen. And it is the best real-time indicator of recession.
Matt, this was awesome. Into the print, coming out of it.
Thank you.
We can do it again. December 13th, put that in the diary or something. Okay, Matt Lazzetti.
Look forward to it.
Deutsche Bank, looking forward to it too.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm
Kathy Jones Jones, now Chief Fixed Income Strategist at Charles Schwab. Thrilled she could join this morning. Kathy, I want to get right to the reality. You know I've been on this. I don't care about spreads. I don't care about fancy convexity in the rest of the Frank Fabozzi world. I'm down 15% in some flavor of quality bonds. How do I begin the recovery?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of choices you have. So, you know, most likely what you want to do is start reinvesting in higher coupon bonds. So in order to recoup your money, you want that coupon money, right? Because that's what you get out of the bond market. It's much less about capital gains. Obviously, that was when yields were falling to zero. But in reality, most income you get from fixed income is the coupon payment. So frankly, to repeat what we had this year and get another 14% down, you'd need rates to go to 9%. Now, I know a lot of bearish people. I don't know anybody talking about 9%. So even in a static or higher interest rate environment, if you have higher coupon paying bonds, mm-hmm. you're going to have a positive total return.
What quality of quality corporates is the best positioning point? Is it the no-brainer AAA? I'm not using that as a credit rating basis, but just the emotional AAA quality, or do you want to go some shades of quality down to find that coupon?
Well, in the corporate bond world, there's not a lot of AAA paper out there anymore. But, you know, you want to stay investment grade, we think. High yield is very appealing at 9% yield. The problem is we haven't really, I don't think, discounted the weakness in the economy that's coming. And there's probably more shakeout there. So pretty cautious on high yield, but sticking with higher credit quality and with munis, too. For if you're in a higher tax bracket, the muni market still offers some very attractive tax-exempt returns.
How much are you staying in cash or short-term bonds? I mean, we just heard from Phil Camparelli over at JP Morgan, 10% of his portfolio in cash because there is an alternative. Are you finding the same thing in fixed income and avoiding, for example, long duration simply because of the uncertainty right now?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of people, stay short, relatively stay short duration. We think that's actually a mistake to stay all in cash because to lock in higher yields right now, we think is an opportunity. We are looking for inflation to come down. We are still looking at a rocky road ahead for the economy. And if you're not locking in some of that income right now, you're probably going to ride it up and ride it all the way down and be looking at lower yields down the road. So we're not extending duration to, 30 years, but we definitely think you should be moving out to at least an ag-like duration in portfolios.
Do you think that longer term, we're going to see an average 10-year yield closer to, say, 3% or even 2%? Is that the more likely kind of target that you're looking at, just to give people an understanding of the rate of change and where we may be headed?
Yeah, we do. I think some of the basic fundamentals haven't changed. So, we've got some, weakness in the economy coming, just the cumulative effect of all the tightening we've seen globally. We should see the economy continue to weaken and inflation come down. But then we haven't really changed the demographic profile globally and domestically mm-hmm. of an aging population. We still have a lot of savings around the world. And frankly, in the U.S., we still have the world's reserve currency that people flock to when, things get tough. So I don't know why we wouldn't go back. We get inflation down to around a roughly 3%-ish 10-year yield.
Hey, Kathy, Ira Jersey over at Bloomberg Intelligence just publishes, and he talks about a 10-year yield that will be hovering and that there'll be almost a stasis. Are you assuming we come out of bond volatility and yield volatility towards a hovering sense of the fixed income market?
Well, I would love volatility in the bond market to come down, but I think we have to get the Fed to slow down or stabilize before that happens. I think one of the concerns I have is that this volatility, this rate of change has been so dramatic and so high that it's kind of destabilizing a lot of other things. So, because bonds are used to price other assets, if you have a highly volatile treasury market, you can't really price those assets very well. So I think down the road, sure, we should get lower volatility, but I think we need to see the Fed plateau at least before that's going to happen.
Kathy, awesome. One of the best, as always. Kathy Jones there of Charles Schwab.
Clark. climate. It was one of the themes in the election, maybe below the radar of crime, immigration, inflation, the economy of America. But nevertheless, it is always with us. Michael Regan joins us now, administrator, yes, of the Environmental Protection Agency, but far more from the backbone in the fields, the hills of North Carolina. He's got an understanding of the value of climate to ourselves. Michael, thank you so much for joining us from COP27. The problem with these interviews is we tend to go big and broad. I want to go narrow, and it does go to the president's back and forth on hydrocarbons, on oil, on net gas, and also on methane emissions from oil. Take us into that little narrow window of methane emissions and what can be accomplished.
Well, thank you for having me. And, you know, the president has pledged that we'll continue to move forward to reduce global warming, to reduce these emissions that cause global warming. He never pledged that we would get out of it immediately overnight, but he pledged that we could work our way out of this. And so I think when we talk about methane in particular, the conversations that I'm having with the oil and gas sector, with technology providers, with, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, is that we see an opportunity to deploy technology to reduce methane and actually save the loss of gas and gas products while saving the planet and protecting public health. We know the technologies exist. We know that there are advanced technologies and business models that can adjust to reducing methane. And so EPA's job is to put some rules of engagement in the role so that all companies know and can make these longer term investments.
How does EPA's job change with the election, including a big Republican win in your North Carolina? I'm fascinated how the oil and gas industry that has a GOP bent will change and amend coming off this election.
Well, you know, the president has had a historic 2 years in passing historic legislation with the bipartisan infrastructure law, the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, resources coming to EPA to help with and enhance the regulations that we are required to put in place by law. So I don't think the elections will change the fact that EPA has legislative authority or authority provided by the legislature or Congress to pursue the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions to protect public health and protect the planet. We're going to continue to move forward and do our job, but the resources that flow from the Inflation Reduction Act just help with that public-private partnership to pursue these reductions, so we're not solely reliant on regulations alone.
How complicated is it right now, Michael, to be with this mandate to reduce emissions at a time where people are prioritizing fossil fuels in light of some of the shortages, in light of the war in Ukraine? Is it perhaps taking some energy away from what you're saying or making it more difficult to argue your cause?
You know, it's a speed bump, right? I mean, I think we find ourselves in this position where many countries are overly reliant on fossil fuels provided by, you know, countries like Russia at a time where it's inconvenient. And we are seeing that this unprovoked war with Ukraine is causing pain globally. If we were not so dependent on these fossil fuels, if we had made the proper investments in clean technologies and energy efficiency and more domestic opportunities, we would not see the price volatility that we're seeing internationally. So it's a wake-up call, right? Number one, it is very inconvenient, obviously. But number two, it is really forcing all of us here at COP to think through how we continue to double down and invest in alternatives to fossil fuels.
Michael Regan, thank you, sir. Michael Regan there of the EPA.
Get a concise daily market update from Charles Schwab, including the latest on U.S. and global economic news, stock updates, monetary policy decisions, and key results and statistics that may impact your trading. Schwab Market Update is an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Join host Keith Lansford for this information-packed daily market recap, delivered in 10 minutes or less. Listen today at schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast or wherever you get your podcast. That's schwab.com/marketupdatepodcast.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is important, John, and you alluded to it. What an election to speak to Terry Haynes. He has a certain perspective.
He got it right. He just got it right going into all of this. Everyone was looking for that massive red wave. It dominated the conversations on this show, and that's not what Terry was looking for. Terry Haynes, founder of Pangea Policy, joins us right now. Terry, why don't you start with what you were looking for and why, and we'll take it from there.
Good morning, John. And, you know, I'm kind of old school. I look at the data as much as possible. I weigh in a bunch of other things. I do pay attention to what some of the aggregators are looking at, whether it be, Real Clear Politics or Nate Silver's site or whatever, as kind of a spice. But I've been around this and doing this a long time. And in the end, what you get from me is my own view. I wasn't seeing a wave. I was seeing a slight reddening of the map, certainly, but probably a small House majority, and the Senate's still up for grabs. But I think right now, a little more likely to go R than D. But it wasn't going to happen. So what you get out of this is you get continued fiscal stability. Nothing in the domestic and continued unanimity on foreign policy.
Terry, will there be a set of Joe Manchins in the House? Will there be centrist Republicans looking to 2024 that will push against more conservative Republicans a la Joe Manchin and the Democrats in the Senate?
Oh, sure. And well, there already are. You know, Manchin by no means is alone. Everybody knows Manchin and Sinema. But yeah, I always look at them and know that they're representing others on issues, whether it be energy issues or, frankly, the regulation of financial services.
Right.
Because remember, they've rejected a bunch of people. Those people exist in the House as well. So, sure, these are four factions, not two parties, I always say. And that's still true.
Well, this is really important. I don't think it's in the zeitgeist right now, Terry. It's not a unified GOP in the House. I get that. But do they have real power to steer GOP legislation with a GOP majority in the House?
Well, if they can unify around some things, sure. And there will be lots of responsible people, Patrick McHenry on financial services being one, who will look to do that exactly. But it won't be an easy process for them, just like it wasn't an easy process for Democrats in the last cycle. It'll take some time. It won't be instantaneous. And of course, if the Senate does not go, whether or not the Senate goes Republicans' way, you need 60 votes to proceed to legislation in the Senate. They won't have anywhere near that. So the net of that is you won't see very much legislation be successful.
Terry, is it too soon to say that Ron DeSantis is the new leader of the Republican Party?
No, probably not, Lisa. It's probably not too soon to say that. Certainly the direction that DeSantis points, which is, kind of unapologetic on policy while at the same time having a winning way about him, not only personally, but through election results, is exactly the direction the party wants to go in. And so, sure, I think that's probably true.
From a substance perspective, how does that differ from Donald Trump?
From a what perspective?
Sorry. From a substance perspective.
Oh, substance perspective? I think how it changes is that kind of consistency of purpose and consistency of message. What always dogged former President Trump was a lack of consistency in messaging and a lack of consistency in substance to some extent. Now, he had some successes where he was laser sharp on both of those, China tariffs being one. But a lot of other things, the Trump White House is a little bit all over the map, and that was bad for them. DeSantis has shown in his governorship that he's learned from that.
Terry, Tom's talked about this. I just want to build on it a little bit more to close out this conversation. The failure to embrace men in voting on the Republican side. Terry, how do they address that? How do they even talk about it in the coming months?
The what, John? I'm sorry.
The failure to embrace mail-in votes on the Republican side.
Oh, yeah.
It just hasn't been part of the strategy for the party. Why not?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's strange, isn't it? They're going to have to, this is probably a wake-up call for that. I don't know why they've been late to the post on that, but they have been. But they're going to have to figure out that there's really two elections here, the mail-in vote election and the day-of vote election. Pennsylvania is a perfect example of that. I could never understand why Oz agreed to debate veterans so late after there were so many votes already starting. And they're already in, and that's probably right. What you want election against him.
Terry,
so, yeah, they have to do something different.
Terry, don't feel bad that you didn't understand John. I didn't understand him either there. You know, like about every fifth word with John, I didn't get the mail-in thing there as well. It wasn't just you.
Shall I go home?
No, it's just like a Peaky Blinders thing. I have to watch
what
the captions
on.
No, I did not understand what John said there, as Terry said the same thing, the accent.
But you're suggesting that was a Brummie accent.
No, I should get it here.
Perfectly.
Now that I think about it, I need to get the word thing at the bottom of the screen.
Closed captions.
Closed captions. I do that with Pinky Blinders. I mean, I have
no idea.
You
didn't understand me either, and I didn't have an accent.
Well, yeah, but, you know, but
that's fair. Yeah.
I need closed caption for Bloomberg Surveillance with John Farrow. I mean, there's no question about it.
Figuring out how offended I should be.
I think
right
quite.
Now.
I think quite. I think you're justified being quite.
Mail-in.
But let's talk about shelter.
Mail-in voting.
Terry Haynes of Pangea Policy.
Just
Terry
hugely Haynes. Valuable. Thank you, Terry. This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and, of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.